Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 24th of August. This hour of the program, we're going to be talking about eggs, why it is that two egg producers in Iowa are to blame for the majority of eggs that have been very unsafe to eat and have caused salmonella sickness in over 1,300 people. We'll have several guests with us during the course of this hour. We're starting with Professor Daryl Trammell, a poultry veterinarian at Iowa State University. Later, we will speak with the food safety director for the Center for Science and the Public Interest and co-author of Is Our Food Safe? A Consumer's Guide to Protecting Your Health and the Environment. And still later, we'll speak with an associate professor at Kansas State University trained in molecular biology who discovered food safety as a place where he could meld his interests in science, society, and policy risk analysis. We will be welcoming your phone calls. I assume we'll have many of them because everybody eats eggs. Not everybody, but many people do. And I'm sure that you've been a little timid about eating eggs, even if they're well cooked, which is what the recommendations are. How did this happen? Is there something different about the way eggs are raised? These large farms, are they not as regulated as they should be? And do they create unsafe conditions? We'll welcome calls at 800-486-8655. The email address is talk@wpr.org. And we start our program with Professor Daryl Trammell from Iowa State University. Professor Trammell, thank you very much for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me.
Tell me what it is that's making people sick. What is this kind of salmonella and how does it infect chickens?
There are about 2,400 different strains or serotypes of salmonella that we know of. And out of that 2,400, only one, a particular one called Salmonella enteritidis, is causing our current problem. The chickens originally become infected probably by mice. We've known for over 30 years that mice contain this particular salmonella. And we've known since the late 1980s that mice are able to transmit this particular strain to egg-type chickens. And if a mouse that's contaminated leaves a fecal pellet in the feed line of the chickens and a chicken consumes the pellet along with the feed, the chicken becomes sick and or becomes infected. And the chicken, even after it is infected, usually shows no symptoms of illness, but it in turn will start shedding this bacteria in its droppings. And this is called horizontal transmission when the bacteria goes from one chicken to another in the same generation. But unfortunately, there's also something called vertical transmission where the bacteria gets on the surface of the eggs and inside the egg. And if we happen to eat an egg that contains the salmonella, then we become ill. So this is how it originally gets into chickens, how it transmits to other chickens in the house, and then how we get it.
So we need to get rid of the mice.
We need to control mice just as much as we possibly can. And rodent control is a standard operating procedure for all of the large commercial operations, or at least it should be.
Mm-hmm. But somebody fell down on the job, particularly at these two large farms in Iowa.
Because mice are so widespread, it's impossible to keep them out of every house. But I can say in fairness, I happen to be at two of the houses of this particular company that's having a problem last spring. Mm-hmm. And I was very pleased to see they did have rodent control measures in place. And so it may not necessarily be that they weren't using rodent control, but the rodents may have gotten in anyway.
So would you say that these two large operations are at this point in time operating safely?
Well, obviously, when you have an outbreak like this, you know something went wrong.
Right.
That's for sure. And I'm sure FDA is working very hard right now to determine what might have gone wrong. There's a number of possibilities. And I think we just have to wait and see the results of FDA's investigation before we really know.
Mm-hmm. Joining us and joining you as well is Caroline Smith DeWall, who is Food Safety Director for the Center for Science and the Public Interest, co-author of Is Our Food Safe? A Consumer's Guide to Protecting Your Health and the Environment. Good morning, Caroline. Thank you for being with us.
Good morning.
You have written that it's ironic that the largest egg recall in history unfolded just the month after long-awaited egg regulations went into effect. What's the history of these regulations?
Oh, these regulations really, the planning for them started probably 20 years ago.
Oh, my goodness.
The problem of Salmonella enteritidis, it was an emerging problem in the food supply maybe 25, 30 years ago when this bacteria first started infecting the ovaries of hens and getting into the eggs. And it became a problem really in the northeast of the U.S. A couple of states, and I think the Department of Agriculture, got involved, and they developed a pilot program in Pennsylvania, which proved very effective at controlling Salmonella enteritidis. And so after that, actually, the Center for Science and the Public Interest and my organization actually petitioned FDA to implement this type of program nationwide. During that time, we saw the problem with SE spread from the northeast area of the country to the southwest. We saw, it spread all over the country. And so we wanted to see these programs put in place nationwide. I'm happy to say that they're now in place, at least for the largest egg producers, but that was only 1 month ago. And so it really has been a regulation that's thoroughly cooked, almost hard-boiled at this point, if you want to add a little humor to it. But it really is a regulation that should have been in place, I would say, 10 years ago.
Would you agree with that, Professor Tremble?
Yes, Carolyn has stated it exactly correct. It began in the Northeast, and this regulation has been under consideration for a lot of years. And finally, on July 9 of this year, it became effective.
Mm-hmm. There have been some people who have expressed concern about the way that these chickens are being raised now, that these facilities are very, very large, and it's probably not the best way to raise chickens to raise eggs, that you've got more feed and more to control and more mice if you've got more feed, that this probably isn't the way that we should be giving the American people eggs. Are you worried about the large farms here? They should be smaller, or no worries? Professor, you want to start? And then, Caroline, I'd like to hear your response, too.
Sure. I think the size of the facilities we have now certainly contribute to the size of the outbreak. Some of our modern egg production facilities have 3 or 4 million hens in production. And when you have perhaps 3 million eggs a day being produced, they're going to go to a lot of different places, as we've seen in the current outbreak. The size of the facility does not necessarily relate to its probability of being infected with Salmonella. We know from our own experience here in Iowa that Salmonella enteritidis can get into and infect egg-type chickens all the way from relatively small organic laying flocks up to the large production facilities that we're dealing with in this outbreak. Peter Holt, a researcher at USDA laboratory, has recently done a study looking at all of the literature that relates to type and size of production units and Salmonella infections. And there are some papers that would suggest the large operations are more susceptible, and there are other papers published that suggest that chickens on the ground or in other non-caged operations are more susceptible. And Dr. Holt has concluded that there just simply is not enough data to come to a conclusion.
Hmm. Caroline, what do you think?
Well, you can have outbreaks linked to giant facilities like this one, and when that occurs, you have a big problem. But you can also have outbreaks linked to a mouse or rat getting into the feed, for example, in a small operation. So I think the key is that the control mechanisms need to be in place. Whether you are a large producer or a small producer, you need to have food safety controls. You need to have a control plan. You need to be able to document it. I think that these large operations certainly have grown in popularity among food producers, but they really do break down into a series of smaller units. And the bottom line is to really control, have tight controls in place, strong food safety control plans in place. And also they require much better traceability.
Mm-hmm.
What we're seeing with this outbreak is a recall of 500 million eggs.
Amazing.
It just boggles the mind. And so we really need systems that allow for tighter traceability. So hopefully these recalls don't get so large.
Well, you have written, and I want to find out what's on the ground now, what took place in terms of regulations as of July 9, and what further regulations we need. You've written the FDA needs a strong inspection force with the tools to mandate recalls. We need to impose civil and criminal penalties and require testing at farms and production facilities. Let me start with you, Professor Tramble. Do we have that now? Will the regulations cover that, or is this something more?
Well, I think the regulations that became effective on July 9 are good, and they'll go a long way toward meeting these needs. And the current regulations that we now exist under require monitoring of chickens all the way from the time they are pullets through the laying cycles. They require refrigeration of eggs so that if a few bacteria are present, they do not proliferate in the eggs. And they require recording and record keeping so that the measures taken can be documented. So I do believe that the measures FDA has now mandated will help a lot with this.
Do we have enough inspectors on the ground, Caroline?
No, we truly don't. The strongest regulations, and I do agree with the professor that these regulations look quite strong on paper, but the strongest regulations aren't worth a lot unless they're being enforced by inspectors. And inspectors really play a role, much like, you know, the school teacher does. I mean, you have a lot of students. They're very smart. You give them the tools that they need to do a good job, but you still need somebody looking over their shoulder to make sure that they're actually complying with what's required to pass the course. And that same holds true here. The egg producers need to know that they're going to be visited and checked on a regular basis. Today, FDA does not have the capacity to do inspections at the egg farms. What they said last week to the media is that they just weren't inspecting in these facilities. And historically, my experience with the agency is they don't inspect unless there's an outbreak. So they run in with lots of inspectors and lots of scientific expertise.
Sure.
After people are already getting sick. That's too late.
How often do you think they should be inspecting, Professor Tramble?
I think with the current regulations in place, just as Carolyn said, FDA has already indicated they have a limited ability. I think, if my memory is correct, they anticipated inspecting about 100 premises nationwide this year. And these the inspections would be done by FDA personnel. They are also considering subcontracting some of the inspecting to some of the state agencies. As far as how often they are inspected, it probably should be based somewhat, at least, upon the case history of individual facilities. If facilities have a good track record and they've had no tracebacks and there's no indication that anything is wrong, maybe once or twice a year would be adequate. If there are other facilities where there have been problems, then probably inspections need to be considerably more often than that.
Let's welcome phone calls for both our guests. We're talking about the safety of eggs, the salmonella outbreak that has affected over 1,300 people in this country. We've learned the reasons for the problem, how insufficient the regulations are, what a difference the regulations that went into effect July 9 will make, and whether or not we need more teeth and more inspectors on the ground and are willing to pay for those as well. Here's our phone number. Please join the conversation, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email address is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. I'm also interested in what's happening with your eating habits as a result of this. Are you cooking your eggs in different ways? Have you decided to not eat eggs for a while? What will make you feel as though the eggs that you are eating are safe? Are you willing to pay more money to have more inspectors? We have two guests with us. We will have three by the end of the hour. Professor Daryl Tramble is a poultry veterinarian at Iowa State University, and Caroline Smith-DeWall is food safety director for the Center for Science and the Public Interest and co-author of Is Our Food Safe? A Consumer's Guide to Protecting Your Health and the Environment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up the second hour of our program today, a little bit of historical memory. What does Louis Brandeis, the Supreme Court Justice at the turn of the last century, mean for us today? All right, let's go to phone calls, starting with Kevin in Madison. Hi, Kevin.
Hi. Thank you. I was just wondering, I can appreciate and understand that there's maybe not a tremendous amount of difference in probability of salmonella infection from between large farms and small farms, but I'm going to continue to buy eggs from directly from a couple of different small farms that I know the chickens are outside eating bugs and weeds in addition to feed, and the quality of the eggs is so superior. The yolks are bright yellow. I believe they're picking up more carotenoids and other things that improve the nutritional quality as well as the taste and the texture of the eggs. I'm wondering about the regulations as far as record keeping and refrigeration and all that. Is that something that small farms are going to have a harder time meeting? Are they liable to comply with these regulations, and is that something that's going to cause a problem for them?
All right, Kevin, thanks. Caroline, you want to start?
Sure, I'll start. I think, Kevin, you've described some of the many wonderful reasons why it is a good idea to buy locally produced food. Food safety isn't always among those. I mean, it really is a reliance on the grower, whether they're big or small, to live up to those food safety requirements. So we have no evidence that locally grown food is either safer or less safe than food coming out of these gigantic farms. I know the smaller growers have a lot of concerns about the impact of regulations. But really, a food safety plan is a basic tool. If you're going to be in the business of producing food that other people are going to buy and consume, you need a plan. You need to understand the hazards involved. You need a plan, and you need to keep records. So I know that the rule does not go into effect for houses of smaller than 50,000 birds until 2012. So they have a lot more time to comply, but I would urge them to comply sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I would think they may want to do that. What about this process? I was watching the news last night or the night before, Dr. Tramble, where they were talking about the process of pasteurization, which would take care of the problem, but the eggs don't taste as good as if they're not pasteurized. What can you say about that?
Oh, pasteurization is a combination of temperature and time at that particular temperature that has been shown to destroy bacteria. Pasteurization is very effective. It must reduce the level of bacteria by at least 5 logs, and that means if you have 100,000 bacteria to begin with, it must be down to 1. And so that's what pasteurization is. Pasteurization is a very good idea. All liquid egg products by law must be pasteurized. So you can go to the grocery store and buy pasteurized liquid eggs. There's also a pasteurization procedure where eggs still in the shell are pasteurized. And you can get those in the grocery store as well. In my view, institutions such as hospitals and institutions for elderly should all be using pasteurized eggs so that their patients are free of the risk of this kind of problem. People with compromised immune systems are most susceptible.
Yes.
And so pasteurized eggs should be used in those institutions.
Yeah. Here's an email that's come in, Caroline, from Frank and Howard. I notice a reluctance in the media, including Wisconsin Public Radio, to name the retailers who stock the infected eggs. After more than a week, the Green Bay Press Gazette finally named Walmart, although not in any headline, as the main retailer in Green Bay which stock these eggs. Only when retailers know that they will suffer from a backlash will they take any interest in the standards of their suppliers.
Oh, that is a great question. We have worked hard, actually, to get the names of retailers disclosed, and we were successful in meat recalls. Actually, now you'll find that where meat has been recalled, those large ground beef recalls, for example, you can actually go into a website, a USDA list, and search for the retailers. But there is something else the retailers could be doing that would really help their customers. And a number of retailers are already doing this. When you have those customer loyalty cards, those shopping cards, or they take your phone number sometimes when you're checking out, they're tracking your purchases. And that means they know, they have a record of when you've purchased a recalled product. We recommend that retailers that use these customer loyalty programs, that they contact people who have purchased the recalled product and ask them to bring it back for a refund. That would be a huge service to the customers. And a number of companies have already started doing that.
And how do we find out what eggs they are right now? Does your site tell us?
No, we recommend you go. There is a site on foodsafety.gov.
Okay.
And also you can go to the FDA website. And I'll actually, if you come back to me later, I will have those websites for you. So your listeners can get their pens, and I will have that for you.
Okay, and we'll put those on our Facebook page as well. Our number is 800-486-8655. For you to join our conversation about eggs and salmonella. Dr. Tramble, are you eating eggs now?
Yes, I am, but I also thoroughly cook my eggs.
So that makes a difference?
Oh, yes. If the eggs are thoroughly cooked, then they're safe to eat.
Could I just like very much to weigh in on that?
Of course.
It is true that you can kill salmonella by cooking your eggs thoroughly. However, I've seen science that suggests that if the eggs are old or if they've been subject to temperature abuse, the Salmonella enteritidis can actually enter the yolk, and it might reach very high levels. It's a risky product. The fact that these eggs have caused so many illnesses suggests to me that there might be something going on, that these might be highly contaminated eggs. And while we don't know that yet, I would really recommend that if you have the lots of the recalled lots of eggs, if you find that the eggs in your refrigerator are part of this recall, don't try to cook them. Either return them for a refund to the retailer or just throw them out. We really would not recommend you try to cook them.
Let's go to Will next on the road. Hi, Will.
Hi, how you doing?
All right, how are you?
Not too bad. I'm kind of interested in, well, I guess not only this problem, but in general, how enforcement is done by the government agencies. Because I've heard on NPR here that these companies, I guess, that had the eggs, had a history of other violations, safety violations and environmental violations and stuff. And I heard the same thing about BP, but then nothing happened, no government involvement really, until something terrible happened. So, I mean, we seem like we're dropping the ball here.
Dr. Tramble?
Well, you are right. There are limited legal authorities available to many of our regulatory agencies. In the current situation with the most recent FDA rules for eggs, it's mandatory that the environment be monitored. If the environment is positive, then it's mandatory that eggs be tested, 1,000 eggs, on four different occasions, 2 weeks apart. If any of those eggs are positive, then it's mandatory that the eggs go to pasteurization. But I think in terms of recall, FDA still does not have legal authority to demand a recall. Recalls are still voluntary. So there are some regulatory gaps still in place.
That's absolutely correct. Recalls are still voluntary. And there are a number of other gaps, as the professor has suggested. Congress is currently considering legislation, and in fact, the Senate is poised to vote on this legislation, hopefully when it comes back in September. So FDA, if this legislation passes, and if FDA gets the resources it needs, they could do a much better job than they're doing today.
The recall is voluntary. That doesn't make much sense, does it?
No. And it's true, actually, of the meat recalls as well. This is really a product of the fact that our food safety laws were grounded in legal thoughts of 100 years ago. They're really still based on the 1906 platform that was passed by Congress after Upton Sinclair wrote The Jungle. I mean, so we have really antiquated legal authorities that the agencies have actually been quite successful in using over the decades, but it's really time to modernize these laws.
Mm-hmm. Professor Tramble, let me give you just a couple questions before we say goodbye to you, because you're probably best to answer these. Here's an email. When we lived in Australia several years ago, eggs were not refrigerated in the grocery store. They were sold on the shelf just like a can of green beans. What do they do differently that doesn't require refrigeration? Why was salmonella not a problem there?
First of all, all eggs should be refrigerated. I think the folks in Australia were just fortunate that they had not had any salmonella enteritidis outbreaks. There's nothing that Australians do different from what we do here in the United States that would prevent these kind of outbreaks. So primarily the folks in Australia were just fortunate if they haven't had the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Salmonella enteritidis, by the way, is a worldwide problem in eggs. Europe has had a big problem with this, and Great Britain and elsewhere. So Australians were just fortunate if they didn't have outbreaks.
But are there other countries that handle this better than we do, that have more inspections so they don't have massive outbreaks, or not?
In Great Britain, for example, they have had programs there that are very effective. And these programs, among other things, mandate that vaccination be done for the chickens. And vaccination against Salmonella enteritidis has been very helpful in reducing outbreaks in Great Britain.
Hmm. And one more for you. From Mark from La Crosse, in the disease transmission process, do the eggs get the bacteria from an infected mother hen or from touching the infected feces?
They can get it both ways. Once a chicken is infected, the bacteria moves to the ovaries and the oviduct. And when eggs are formed in the oviduct, contamination can occur on the inside of the egg. And usually these Salmonella enteritidis are present right on the surface of the yolk. And feces that are contaminated can also leave bacteria on the surface of the eggshell. So it can happen both ways.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for your expertise. We appreciate your being with us. Professor Daryl Tramble, poultry veterinarian at Iowa State University, will be meeting a new guest in just a moment. Carolyn, I don't think I got your response. Are you eating eggs?
I haven't been eating eggs over the last weekend, but that's not unusual. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. I did want to give your listeners the website where they can get the complete list.
Great.
It's really simple. Just go to www.fda.gov.
FDA.gov.
Right. And you'll see the salmonella outbreak right at the top of the page with a picture of a beautiful egg there in a pan. And then if you go down to how to identify recalled eggs, that gives consumers the information both on what to look for on the package, but also the brand names and the lot numbers and what are called Julian dates. Now, this raises another question of why don't we have use-by dates or sell-by dates or destroy-by dates on our eggs? The Julian date is a date that's used industrially to indicate the day of the year that something was produced, but it really doesn't make a lot of sense on food products where you're trying to communicate with the public about when the eggs should be used by or when they really are out of date.
I didn't notice that on egg cartons. Is that true of all egg cartons? They don't say use by?
Some of them, it's voluntary by the company, and there are some states that actually have required use-by dates, but mostly it's voluntary. And the identification for all these eggs is through Julian dates, which is just not a very clear communication tool for the public.
Mm-hmm. When you talk about the Senate coming back and, as you suggest, taking up this congressional bill that was passed last year, what more improvements will we see? We will see then recall being mandatory?
Yeah, we will see a number of major improvements. As I mentioned, the legislation really is to try to modernize this very old underlying legal structure. So the first thing it's going to do, it's going to cover all FDA-regulated foods. So seafood, produce, all of these food products will be covered. And it requires that growers and producers have a food safety plan that they abide by standards in the case of growers that help to control pathogens in the food supply. So these controls, these preventive control systems will be mandated across the industries. They will also have a mandatory inspection frequency, and that becomes really important for these high-risk facilities. The House bill requires that FDA will inspect every 6 to 12 months, which is, as the professor suggested, the right frequency probably for a well-performing plant. It also has a number of penalties. It gives the agency the ability to fine companies that fail to comply with the law, or even if they're intentionally failing to comply, as we saw with the peanut butter example a year and a half ago, it would give the FDA the ability to have criminal penalties that fit that type of a crime. Right now, our laws are just really out of date. And so this will give FDA many more tools, the most important of which are recall, traceability, and this mandatory inspection frequency, which they don't have today.
We're talking about eggs this hour of the program and the number of eggs that have been infected and are making people sick. And we hear from news reports yesterday that this is only likely to grow. We're having another guest join us. Professor Douglas Powell will join us momentarily, Associate Professor of Food Safety at Kansas State University. He's trained in molecular biology and discovered food safety, a place that he could meld his interests in science, society, and policy. The lab is called the International Food Safety Network, and it seeks innovative ways to compel everyone in the farm to work food safety into the system. Individual producers, retail employees, and consumers to adopt the best practices to reduce the risk of foodborne illnesses. Our phone number continuing the same. We have a ton of phone calls. We'll get to most of you before the hour is over. 800-486-8655. The email address is talk@WPR.org. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Second hour of our program today, we'll be talking about Supreme Court Justice Louis Brandeis. After Thomas Jefferson, our guest Jeffrey Rosen says, Brandeis was the most important American critic of bigness in business and in government, and his views about the need for citizens to achieve their potential in small-scale communities reflected his own upbringing. He was an enormously powerful guy, and we'll be talking about that with him. And joining us now is Professor Douglas Powell, Associate Professor of Food Safety at Kansas State University. Professor Powell, thank you very much for joining us.
Good morning.
Yeah, we have a lot of interest in this. Give me your overview. I know that you're working with foodborne illnesses. Are we seeing many more of those due to lack of regulation, or are we seeing as many as we saw, say, 50 years ago or 60 years ago?
It's difficult to compare with 50 to 60 years ago simply because we didn't have an understanding of the microbiology. Some of these pathogens we've only become to understand in the last 20 or 30. My sense is the food is as safe as it's ever been. Whether that's reassuring or not is open to question.
Mm-hmm. Would you agree with that, Caroline?
Yes, but really I will note that this outbreak was a bit of a surprise. Egg safety has improved. CSPI has been managing an outbreak database, which covers about 17 years of data. And even though most foods we saw a jump up in outbreaks largely due to better reporting of outbreaks, over this period of time, we've actually seen egg outbreaks declining. So we really thought that even though the government wasn't acting, that the industry and some of the states were taking action and safety was improving. But clearly, this outbreak really proves that overall a uniform regulatory platform is needed because one bad actor can really cause this major outbreak and recall.
Mm-hmm. And what about those bad actors? You wrote in a recent piece that the DeCoster family operation, one of the 10 largest egg producers in the country, has withstood a string of reprimands, Professor Powell.
Actually, I didn't write that, but and I would say that it's not clear that more regulation is going to make a difference here. Something clearly went wrong in this particular outbreak, but the details are lacking at this point. I don't know if it means there's need for mandatory regulations or not. I think that the companies that buy these eggs, they should already have been testing and should have been clued in to any potential problems. So there's been a failure in the system somewhere. How that's best fixed, I don't necessarily know.
Mm-hmm. Caroline, you want to respond to that?
Clearly, the regulations, the voluntary compliance, which Doug is talking about, is something that, as I said, we hope all industry was living up to. But if testing was being done in the facilities, this company should have had an early warning that they had problems with Salmonella enteritidis in their barns.
Mm-hmm.
Starting July 9th, as the Iowa State professor indicated, all companies with over 50,000 hens will have the responsibility to be doing that testing in their barns. They weren't required to do that before July. So I think that this is clearly an improvement, and clearly the voluntary systems didn't work effectively.
Diane from Appleton is our next caller. Hi, Diane.
Hi there. Good to talk to you. My question is, well, first of all, I just want to make a comment. You know, we're so concerned about other countries getting into our food supply and causing us harm when, in fact, it's our own American greed, it seems, that is going to do us in. I just had to make that comment here. We're looking at outside of the United States, and I think the problem is within us. But my question is, when you're treating these chickens, I know we're all so concerned about taking in antibiotics in our food. How exactly are these chickens being treated when they have to eradicate this. And as I understand from hearing some of the news segments, the recall should have happened quite a long time ago. There's been so many people, even over more than a period of a month, that have been infected with this, and the recall took this long.
Professor Paul?
Well, yeah, the recall, as I mentioned before, there's a lot of questions that still are not resolved. What did people know when? I've heard snippets, but I haven't heard a lot of details. Furthermore, what kind of testing has been going on? The egg industry itself has been pretty quiet in this whole outbreak scenario. And, you know, as a consumer, when we go to the grocery store and we pick up eggs, I mean, I got a bunch of kids staying here with me right now, and they eat eggs all the time. And I don't know, maybe we should be marketing food safety at retail. I'd really like to be able to buy eggs where I had some verification of testing that was on the label. That's what I'd be interested in. And right now, it's just a blind game when you go grocery shopping.
Hmm. Are you aware of any companies that do that verification of testing, Caroline?
I'm not. And I think that companies have not wanted to market their products as safer or less safe. It's apparently not been a big marketing approach that the industry has used. As I mentioned, I do think the retailers play a role, and they could notify their customers when, in fact, they've purchased recalled product. But the caller also asked about this question of how do you treat the flocks when they're found to be infected. The interesting thing about Salmonella enteritidis is it really doesn't make the chickens sick. The chickens look like healthy chickens. They act like healthy chickens. They don't seem to be any worse for wear. So there isn't a real treatment. But your earlier caller had asked a question about Australia and what steps are being taken in other parts of the world. In Northern Europe, one thing they've done is they've actually destroyed flocks that were positive for Salmonella. They just got rid of them. And they really have maintained very strict standards for limiting the amount of salmonella overall in their chicken populations. And that has resulted in safer poultry products. Australia as well was pretty lucky not to have big problems with salmonella enteritidis. But in recent years, they actually have had some major outbreaks linked to eggs, and some of them were deadly, especially those in nursing homes.
Let's go. Thank you very much, Diane, for your call. We go to Judy from Milwaukee. Hi, Judy.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
After seeing Food Inc. and reading the various books about factory farming, I decided that it didn't seem sensible to me that you could overcrowd and highly stress animals without affecting their immune systems and the transmission of disease. So I only shop at the Outpost or Whole Foods, and I try to stick with eggs from Organic Valley Farms and Yuppie Farms and the Whole Foods brand, because I've checked and they tell me the care they take with their animals and how they aren't overcrowded. Is my thinking right in this regard? And have there ever been outbreaks from companies that are as well-respected as these?
Professor Paul.
Yes, there have. Those animal welfare standards are, you know, that's a consumer choice. You can choose whatever you want. Is it necessarily linked to rates of salmonella? The evidence is just simply not there. Salmonella is naturally existing. I think in a lot of these things, we forget the biology. Salmonella naturally exists. It's out there, regardless of the production system. Even, you know, every year, if you look at broilers, the chickens that we eat for meat, the ones that are free range have higher rates of salmonella, for instance, in their meat than conventional raised birds. So it's not clear cut. There's a lot of biological questions that need to be addressed.
Thank you, Judy, very much for the call. Here's another email. I know that not everyone can purchase eggs directly from the farmer along these same lines, but if at all possible, try to make the effort. You may pay a bit more for them, but the dangers of getting sick from them are much less. Would you disagree with that, Professor Powell?
Yes, I would. I think that we can lull ourselves as consumers into a false sense of security. Eggs are a food product that it's impossible to tell whether it's contaminated or not. And as consumers or as food service workers, we really have to be vigilant in how we handle them. And it's not just, I mean, some of the consumer advice that's out there says just cook your eggs. It's not that straightforward. If you've ever made scrambled eggs or something, you know that there's little drops of egg that go all around the kitchen, and that risk is increased, especially if you're in food service and using thousands of eggs in a day. Mm-hmm. So it's not that straightforward.
Caroline?
I would agree with Dr. Powell on this, that we cannot, unfortunately, equate high standards for animal treatment, for example, with food safety. Sometimes, in fact, it might work in the reverse, that, you know, the animals, for example, that have the most access to the outdoors might, in fact, be getting more exposure to pathogens. That could have a benefit to their, because some of these natural bacteria might, in fact, compete with the pathogens, but we don't know. So the bottom line is you may want to purchase products that are organic or that have an animal humane treatment label. There are lots of ways that you may want to make purchasing decisions, but it doesn't give you the guarantees in terms of food safety that we need to see at the governmental level. I mean, the reason government regulation works is it provides a level playing field. Everybody, the big guys, the little guys, the organic guys, everybody has to comply with the same protocols to ensure safety.
And let's go to Ellen from Spring Valley, Minnesota. Hi, Ellen.
Hello.
Hi.
As a former livestock person, I'm more interested in the vaccine. We ran dairy and we run pork. And the one thing that I found that helped more than anything was the vaccines we could do to reduce the viruses, the diseases. And if they were exposed, they were more protective. So these vaccines for salmonella, are they available here? Can we get those from our local vet? You know, I guess I'm more into that. I'm a farmer's market person. I sell produce right from my garden, and safety is a big issue. But anything that goes outdoors, anything that's housed indoors, has the capability of picking up something to make you sick.
Mm-hmm. Professor Powell.
Well, I think that's a key point, is that biologically, these things are out there regardless of our production system, and you can really get a false sense of security. Vaccines are one additional tool that can help reduce the incidence of things like salmonella. They've certainly been in development, but I'm not aware of a widespread, really effective vaccine, especially for salmonella. But, you know, people are working on it.
Okay.
And thank you so much for the call. I guess one thing that has been troubling me as a result of this hour is how long we have gone in this country without some kind of standard oversight of this industry. What has kept us from doing something, and we still haven't done all that we should do? What's the hang-up here, Caroline?
Well, I think that the hang-up really has been that this issue of egg safety has really been one that fell through the cracks of our regulatory system. We have two agencies in Washington who are tasked with ensuring food safety, the U.S. Department of Agriculture and the Food and Drug Administration. And while everybody agreed that the Food and Drug Administration was in charge of the shell egg, nobody could really agree on who was in charge of the hens.
Oh,
and you
gosh.
Can't address salmonella enteritidis without addressing the health and the status of the hens that lay those eggs. So the bottom line is it really fell between the cracks of these government agencies. You're seeing some of that reporting start to come out today. And that's why it's really urgent that Congress move forward with the legislation that the Senate will hopefully consider in September. We need to prevent these outbreaks from happening. And in the current system, you just end up with a lot of government agencies, but no one really in charge.
Right. Do you think that the Senate will pass that bill, Professor Powell?
Oh, I don't know. I don't think legislation actually makes people safer. It's an interesting, you know, to look at these things. What I'm interested in is what's going to make people not get sick from the food they consume day in, day out.
Right.
Is it legislation? Maybe. It has a role to play. It sets a minimal standard. But the companies that provide food day in, day out go far above and beyond that. Now, in this case, there's been a massive failure, and we really need some details about what's going on. There's been a lot of side discussion about maybe it's legislation or maybe it's animal welfare. We need to know what's going on in this particular case.
All right. Thank you very much for being with us. Again, we direct you to foodsafety.gov for more information about what has been recalled and how you can keep yourself safe when it comes to eggs. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour and to Chrissy Pease for on-air production.